course, that he was wearing the ring. So the king wore the ring at all times, while passing judgment in his court, whilst eating stupendous feasts that lasted all day, while being carried on a special sort of bed covered with ostrich feathers through the streets of his city, and even while sleeping in the royal bedchamber at night. The king wore the magic ring every hour of every day, except when he went for his ceremonial bath. On these occasions, the king was carried to the crystal clear pool beside the waterfall. There, all his servants and his children and his many wives bowed low to him and then backed away out of sight. Once they had left, the king would take off his crown of gold and ivory and peacock feathers, his cloak of gold and silk and precious stones, his sandals of ebony and rhinoceros hide, and his robe of the purest white linen. And then he would take off his ring and hide it in a place so secret and well concealed that neither his servants, nor his children, nor even his many wives could make the slightest guess as to where it was. And as soon as he had finished his royal bath, the ring was the first thing the king put on again, before he allowed anyone to come anywhere near him. He treasured the ring because it made him the most powerful king in Africa. But the day arrived when he stepped, dripping, out of his ceremonial bath into the warm sun to find that the ring was not there. At first with amazement and then with fear, the king searched his secret hiding place and all around it. The ring was gone. Somebody among all his servants and his children and his many wives must have discovered the hiding place and dared to take the ring. The king was furious, but he was also afraid. If he offered great rewards for finding the ring, then everyone would know that he no longer had it. They would know that he was no longer protected from harm. They would know that he was no longer the most powerful king in Africa. For days, the king sat and worried. He paced up and down his private chamber. He sat for hours, staring at the ground or at the sky. He couldn't sleep. All his wives shook their heads in sorrow, and his children kept well away. It was his favorite wife who persuaded him to tell her what was wrong. Immediately, she went to the house of the wisest of all the diviners, a man called Zafuza. With wild eyes and bracelets jangling on his arms, Zafuza sprang into the courtyard where the king was sitting. Plumes of feathers danced and waved in his headdress, and strips of furry skin dangled from his waist. He looked like a feathered leopard with 100 tails. He listened silently while the king told him about the stolen ring. Then Zafuza opened one of the leather pouches that hung from his beaded belt and took out the set of bones that he used to find the answers to difficult questions. Smoothing a circle in the sand, Zafuza held the bones towards the sky, gave a sharp cry, and then dropped them. Carefully, he examined the pattern in which they lay. Then Zafuza straightened up and looked at the king. "Your ring will be found, Your Majesty," he said. "The thief is close to us."
"Who is it?"
demanded the king. Zafuza shook his head. "You shall see. You will not need magic. Send for your woodcutters." The king did so at once, and Zafuza explained to them what was needed. At dawn on the next day, all those who could possibly have had the slightest chance to steal the ring were gathered in the great square in front of the palace. The king appeared at the top of the steps leading down from the front door and stood there, staring silently at the bowing people. Then he clapped his hands, and soldiers appeared all round the square, ready and armed with sharpened spears, so that no one could escape. Through a small archway appeared Zafuza, all the more terrible now, with white circles around each eye and strange, dark,